this morning. We have a couple of things on tap. So hopefully people kind of wander in. We have one resource that we want to share with you, kind of into the practical side of, you know, we've been talking about living in the light of dying, finishing well. How do we think about these things, no matter what stages of life we might be at? So wanted to share a little bit with you about this resource that we have available in our drive. Apparently, it's not the most up-to-date one that I have for you this morning, but that doesn't really matter for you. You'll be able to access it that way. And next week, we will have some hard copies for you as well. But Dick's just going to run us through that. And then we have Alan run us through at least part of it. And then Alan's going to talk to us a little bit this morning about palliative care and hospice. What exactly are those things? How do we think about them? And as one who works in that field, answer a few questions for us. So with that in mind, I'm going to let Dick go for a couple of minutes and just share a couple of things about this resource.
And 6 months after we moved, this idea of starting a new company came up, and I became the person in charge of all the buying and inventory management, and did that for the next 22 years until the company was sold, and then even worked for the new company beyond that. Okay, I got it. All right. Okay. Anyway, so. Okay, so what we've got here with this book is, or booklet is a. Anyway, Jim died 2 years ago, and we went to the funeral in Ann Arbor, and the family were passing out this booklet. And I brought it home and kind of sat on it for a couple of years and then looked at it this summer in the context of doing this class and thought that this would really be a good addition to for the class and a way to pull the whole thing together. So I've left the text pretty much alone as it is, the 13 pages of it mainly. We've revised the bibliography and all the websites that were listed, and then changed the scriptures and the bibliography that's there. So next week you should get those. And a couple of things about the changes. All of the websites that are listed in the booklet are out of date, and so that's been fixed. And then the one website I would like to mention in particular that I found is called finishingwellministries.org. And that's a great one, and it's listed in the book for all kinds of things along the same topics that we've been talking about. And then I've also discovered that this whole idea, the phrase finishing well, has really been used in a lot of contexts. It's now even a category on Amazon, which has lots of things under it. And so that's worth looking at just to see what's there. And then one of the products that's come out in this kind of context is the products called Knock Blocks, N-O-K-B-O-X products that have all kinds of files and filing, you know, drawers and shelves and just things, ways to organize life as we're finishing well. So that's just something to know about. The book is useful and practical in a couple of ways. It, I think, can stimulate conversations in a family, which is a valuable thing to do about these sorts of topics, because often it doesn't happen. And I'm personally a good example of that. My mom died when I was 14. My dad and mother never talked to me about it before she died, and he never really talked with me about it after she died. I went to school the morning she died because I didn't know what else to do. But the worst part is, in many ways, that because of that not talking about it, the family, my older brother and younger sister, who was 11 years younger at the time, also have never really talked about my mom with my dad. And so the whole inability to talk about death and dying really kind of short-circuited the relationship that our family has had with my mother. And if she had a younger sister, and I learned some things about her from her sister, but other than that, it really has hurt the family. And so I think it makes so much sense to have a book like this where you can look at it and have conversations with yourself and then have some conversations with the whole family. There's ideas in there that will help stimulate that. Then the other thing it really serves to do is it's a personal management tool. So it's a resource and a reminder of the kinds of checklists that you can go through to finish things well. So, and then specifically a few thoughts on the document. Just turn with me. It's okay where is it? Here. Get organized here. Okay, on the first page, here's the mission that Jim writes. He said, you could use or alter this mission that he's written. Well, the mission is, my purpose in life is to love and serve God and or others, plus all of creation, with my whole heart, mind, and in my deeds. And then he makes the reference, you can change this, of course, to your own mission. The value of a book like this or a booklet like this is you can do whatever you want with it. It's yours, and you know, you can make it your own in whatever way you want. I think that one of the things that's good about it is that it really is a way for us to be active rather than passive, to be proactive in dealing with these issues rather than waiting until they happen to you and then you react. We've got a good example of that. We've got a friend whose mother just died, and the father is completely lost. He doesn't know what to do without his wife. And it's one of those things that if he had been a little bit prepared, life would probably be going a little bit better for him. So there are action steps in it, as you can see, and those are yours to adopt or in fact change and personalize in whatever way you want. And some of them are, as Jim gets at some things pretty good, like on objective one, there, the second one there, for the next page. I will refrain from being stubbornly unreceptive to new ideas. That's one of those things that is, you know, a personal conversation may be quite useful. I will become or remain interested in all ideas and points of view expressed in a personal conversations, books, and other media, continuing to humbly examine and perhaps even reshape some of my views. So, and then you'll notice there's a place to where it says, I will, you can change them, you can add your own. Okay, objective two has to deal with making an orderly transfer of transition of property, possessions, and sell records. And I think we all know the need for that. The question is always getting around to it. One of the things that came up with regard to this is, and oftentimes there's a need to have an attorney do this, and the deacons have agreed to the idea of maintaining a list of 5 or 6 or 10 vetted attorneys that you could go to get a will or the other thing, the other basic documents that are listed there, like durable power of attorney and do not resuscitate and so on. So that's available, can be available to you. Okay. I think that's about it I have. And Andrew was going to have some things. No, wait, no, here we go. In stage 3, or objective 3, in each stage of my advancing years, I will choose to fully accept my losses and necessary adjustments. I think this is a really interesting, because that's another thing that happens. These losses are coming, and we don't often, or we sometimes just don't do what we should do to prepare for them. And so when the losses come, we find ourselves, again, reacting rather than acting in a way that is useful and good. Okay, and then, I think that's, okay, that's about, and objective 4, you know, he talks about health and mentions the whole idea of diet and exercise, and the standard exercise state they say for people is 75 minutes a week, 15 minutes, 5 days. But the thing they don't talk about in here, he doesn't mention, is sleep. And the recommendations I've normally heard is you really gotta, as an older person, or you need to get 6 or 7 hours of sleep a night. Okay, then the other thing I would recommend on objective 5 is in terms of this whole idea of forgiveness, is in particular, you know, we went through a session on, or series on forgiveness, but probably one of the better books in that area is Tim Keller has a whole book on that subject. So, anyway.
Good. You know, as Dick said, you know, there's a number of things. I'm just going to read through some of these other objectives and encourage you to just take a look at the resource. And it's going to hit different people in different places. Some of it you're going to be further ahead. Some of it you may be things you've never thought of, or you know, just at the phase of life where you are, it would be good for you to think about. In all of my relationships, I will endeavor to reflect a good character through my attitudes and actions. Obviously, this is true for all Christians, but as we think about finishing well, this is something that is important. I will bear pain and suffering courageously. This is something that is not easy. Continually, some of those losses mount that Dick mentioned a little bit earlier. As we see the weakening, you know, Ecclesiastes 12 talks about, you know, the keepers growing dim, and you know, all of the tremblings that happen and various things in our bodies, like, you know, bearing pain and suffering courageously without self-pity or resentment, both now and in the future. I know a few weeks ago we referenced Johnny Erickson Tada as a person who really has borne a tremendous amount of suffering, but she does it with the reality of heaven, you know, infecting or impinging on her current situation. And so what does that look like for us as we walk those steps? Objective 8, I will compose a memoir so as to leave a helpful record of my life, including my birth, family of origin, places I've lived, education, place of employment, spiritual journey, marriage, family, hobbies, travels, joys, successes, failures, health issues through the years, and hopes for the future. That's a lot of different things. But this is something that you may not think about, but you know, what does it look like to pass on to the next generation some of the different things? Maybe you're not a writer, maybe you can do it through photo books. You know, you like to do that sort of things where you're putting those together. Obviously, there's lots of tools that can help us do that. You know, your Shutterfly and Snapfish and whatever other things are out there can be really helpful with that. Some of you, I know our kids got for my parents one of these deals that gives them a prompt each week, is it? I don't know. Each week or each month, and then they write out about different things about their life, and then it compiles it all together into a little booklet. So there are ways that can do this, but you know, as people who are growing older, we have a story to tell. And we, of course, want to focus that on the goodness of what God has meant in our lives. We want to have honesty. You know, we're talking about doubts. I think, you know, it can be really helpful if the fathers and mothers in our lives share about their struggles over the course of their life so that, you know, the young men, the young women, the children that are coming behind, they don't feel like they're the only ones. They feel like they have some solidarity with both their folks in the faith as well as with their own flesh and blood or their family, their nuclear family. Yeah. 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 Well, that's right. Yes. And when do you know when you're going to finish your record? I mean, we may not have a say on when we're going to finish that. So there's the act. I mean, I think the bigger thing is I will begin. That's the bigger step. And then, you know, we can encourage each other to persevere in that. It's good. It's good. Feel free, any other comments as we're going around, things that strike you? Objective 9, I will continue to do all I can to leave a positive personal legacy, which I will acknowledge is even more value than a financial legacy. And this, very similar to one of the previous objectives, just living in holiness, thinking through that, just putting the emphasis on the fact, you know, a lot of folks think about like wealth donation and how do we pass that on to our kids to the degree that we can. There's lots of discussions about that, how good that is, even sometimes in lives. And, you know, we can get our whole focus on that. But there's something obviously much richer that we pass on than just simply material finances. We're going to talk a little bit next week about, well, this is the next one, Objective 10. I will make my preferences known to my loved ones regarding my funeral and burial. We'll talk about funerals next week, but thinking about that, super helpful, I can just say, as a pastor, when people have given me already the hymns that they want to sing, the texts that they would like preached, I mean, I'm like, yes, let's go. So that is something that is very, very helpful. And then Objective 11, This gets to what you were saying, Alice. I will place this plan for finishing well in my tickler file, my reminder file, and once a month I will do my best to read and review what I've committed myself both to be and to do. So just creating that self-feedback loop so that we can have an understanding and keep moving forward in these various things. So like I said, this is a resource. You can go to that file. If you don't have the file, if you never did the QR code, email the office. They can send you a direct link to that file. You can get this. I'll have some copies of this hard paper next week, and we can work through it. But this is where we want to just spend a little bit of time thinking practically. Now we want to talk a little bit about, how do we think about some of these things, especially the idea of palliative care and hospice care. This is something that I think a lot of people think about, both for themselves. How do we help our family know what our wishes are with regards to some of this? But then sometimes you're on the other side and you're a child who is thinking through this for a loved one, and they haven't let their wishes be known. And, how do we make decisions on that? So I'm going to turn it over to, can you do this yourself? Okay. You've got 20 minutes. Yeah. That's what we bargained for, right?
Well, good morning, everyone. I am Alan Waters, and I am employed as a nurse practitioner, and I do...
Two fingers.
There you go. Thank you. Yeah. And I do palliative care. I do home visits. That's my job. So the whole issue of palliative and hospice care is something that I care very much about. And I think it's very impactful for people.
Two fingers.
Why is palliative and hospice care, why is it important? Because this type of care can have a major positive impact in the quality of life when health is declining and death is approaching. So you may be a healthy person and death is a long way off from you, so this is not something that in the forefront of your thinking. But as life goes on and we age especially, then this can become more of an important issue. Okay, hands up. Hands up, anyone here who has ever had hospice or a close family member has hospice, any experience with hospice? Okay, that's great. So I would say nearly half of us here. Okay, that's great. Hands up those who've had experience with palliative care. If you have had a family member or you yourself have received palliative care, much less. Okay, and that's probably pretty typical. So just a word of explanation. What is hospice care? It became evident to a group of people some time ago that conventional medical care, when people were at the end of their life, was often failing. People were experiencing like pain or anxiety or spiritual distress or had social problems, and conventional medicine wasn't meeting that. So some people got together, and from that, the modern hospice movement was born. The idea of giving dignity and quality of life to people at the very end of life. Hospice care has been going on for a few decades. And then other people started to reflect that there are a number of people who deal with advanced or chronic illness, which has a major impact on the quality of their life. And this may go on for many years or even decades. but often conventional medicine is blind to those other issues. So the idea of palliative care came about, taking a lot of principles from hospice care and sort of moving that further along the person's life and engaging that earlier. So palliative care is available to those typically with a life-limiting illness. They may not always appreciate that that's what they've got. And then over time, it often can lead in or will lead into hospice care. Okay. So when a person has a serious disease, often they get on what I would call the medical conveyor belt. They get a problem, they go to their family doctor does some testing, and then they'll refer them to a specialist. And they go to see the specialist, and every year they'll have appointment with their specialist, and there'll be further tests, and there's imaging, and there's blood testing. And this conveyor belt, once it's initiated, will keep going. Will keep going to the last hours of someone's life. Because there isn't the incentive for the doctors, for the medical staff to say to someone, we can keep doing this, and I can keep earning money from this, but is this really what you want? Is this really helping you? And I think palliative care and hospice can be very good, particularly hospice care, in being able to step off the medical conveyor belt. Because when a person is dealing with advanced or serious disease, it becomes all-consuming, or can become all-consuming. People get tired. People lack energy. They can have greater problems moving or leaving the house to go to these medical appointments. Their family has to step in to give more care. And so, like, thinking about your preferences of end of life when you're tired, when you're weak, when you're in pain, it's harder to do. So, like, the resource book that we've got, this is a good thing to do when you don't have a problem. Because the reality is, often, particularly when someone's very much closer to the end of life, we don't have the emotional energy sometimes to deal with some of the things we need to think about. So what is palliative care? Palliative care is a medical service that comes by referral by a medical provider or a hospital doctor or your family doctor. It can come to a person's home. You can receive it while you're in hospital, or you can go to a clinic or an office like you go to a cardiology office or something like that. There can be a cost. Some palliative care is free, like the service I do, or some you may have to pay a deductible or copay like any other medical service. Palliative care theoretically could be in place for years. Practically, what I see often is that many palliative care companies are focusing on a year or two. They will help someone, and then at the end of their year, if the person transferred to hospice, great. If they're doing well, they'll just step back and say, okay, good. Keep doing what you're doing, and if you need our help later, we can come back. In palliative care, the focus is on disease and symptom control. So things like pain, anxiety, breathlessness, nausea, appetite, dizziness, they're all things that people can feel. And they all have the potential to really impact a person's life. But let's take like breathlessness. The experience of feeling out of breath. There are many conditions which can cause breathlessness. But a person may be going to see a pulmonologist because they've got a lung disease like asthma or COPD, and the pulmonologist is working principally in trying to keep them out of hospital and manage their lung disease. But they may not always be effective in tackling the person's experience of being out of breath. A lot of what they will do will impact that, but there's a limit. If we think about someone with a cancer, they may be going to see a cancer specialist or oncologist who will manage the cancer. They will do the surgery or the chemotherapy or the radiotherapy to try and cure, get rid of the cancer, or at least put it into remission. But while the person is seeing the oncologist for treatment, they may also be referred to a palliative care team because they will then deal with the pain, the anxiety, the breathlessness, and these other issues. So if you're sick with this kind of stuff, it makes a big difference to your daily life. You could go to a specialist and they say, "You're doing great. I'm looking at the numbers, I'm looking at the blood test, and you're doing great." And you as the individual may say, "Well, that's great, doctor, but I feel lousy. Every day is a struggle for me to get out of bed and to get from one side of the day to the other." Hospice care is a different thing, particularly here in the US. Hospice care is something that's funded by the government through Medicare. It can only come when there's a physician order. Now, you may have a problem, you may have a family member, you yourself may wonder, "Well, maybe should I be thinking about hospice care? Is this an appropriate thing to do?" Anybody at any time can contact a hospice agency and ask for an informational visit where they can come to you and they will explain what they do and they can make an assessment like, maybe you are eligible for hospice service, maybe this would be a good thing for you, or it may be kind of like, "No, you've got some issues, but you're really too healthy for us, so we'll see you a long time from now." Location. Hospice is primarily an in-home service these days. Hospice services can come into the hospital, like a person will be admitted for a problem, and then after a while, the internal medicine service will turn to hospice and say, "Can you come and see this patient?" So you may meet hospice in hospital. Hospices also have some of them their own facilities. So like my father, he had advanced heart failure. And when he had advanced heart failure, his wife, who was an ex-nurse, took care of him. But unfortunately, it got to the stage where she was no longer able to take care of him, emotionally and for other things. So he went and stayed in a hospice facility who took over all his care. And that was a benefit for him and my mother. Hospice is free. It doesn't cost you anything. Duration. Hospice is, by definition, something that lasts for 6 months. There are people who are referred to hospice. They go to hospice, and I think often because of the stress of being ill is reduced. They're no longer having to go out for all these medical appointments, etc. There are a number of people who graduate from hospice. 6 months later, they're still alive. In fact, they're doing better. So the hospice says, "Okay, good on you." And they go away and they go back to normal life and they're seeing their doctor and they might live another year, two, three. And then if they decline again later on, they could go back on hospice service. So hospice care is also, like palliative care, involved in symptom control. But because it's government benefit in a way, there are some five parts that each hospice agency must be able to provide. There are more that many will do, but there are five that they have to be able to do. One of them is a regular visit for a registered nurse, might be once or twice a week. One is personal care. So when someone is really breathless, sometimes they get to the point where just washing themselves, showering, becomes too exhausting for them. So hospice will provide someone who can come and help the person wash or dress. They have to be able to provide equipment. So if a person's really tired or in a lot of pain, they may be bedbound. They may have great difficulty moving from one room to the other. Hospice can provide hospital beds for the home or a commode to be by the person's bed so they don't have to walk down the hall to get to the bathroom, or oxygen if they're out of breath. And then respite care. So many situations, a person's ill, their spouse is their main carer. With the respite care, if the carer has a medical problem and has to go into hospital, then the hospice will then take over the 24-hour care of the person. Okay. Right, so I want to stop. Has anyone got any questions, any issues? Over here, yes, sir. Probably. I mean, that's a very broad description. Like we think of dermatology or cardiology, we can think of palliative care as its own discipline. So what services are available with a particular agency will vary. Yeah. Well, a care worker can come, that care worker can come from a variety of different things. The family doctor might be ordering home care, which has a care worker. Hospital services will sometimes send out a care team afterwards. A palliative care may have their own care workers that they use. Okay, so yeah, you can pay for home care services out of pocket, and then there are other services which can be arranged either through palliative care or your own family doctor, which the insurance will pay for or pay for part of it. Sir. So I'd just like to end with two other points which are not directly related to hospice or palliative care, if I may. Qualities to help us live in the light of dying when I think particularly we're dealing with illness. One of them is honesty. It takes a lot. This makes a big difference because I think often when someone is ill, they may not appreciate how ill they are. And even if they are ill, they will often try and minimize their sickness. So honesty from the medical staff and honesty in ourselves is very important. They also, I would tie that in with humility, like asking for help, asking family members for help, asking the deacons for help, asking people in the church. And then courage. Andrew spoke on that and mentioned that earlier, but for us to sit down and contemplate our own mortality or a family member's mortality and start to talk to them about that takes a lot of courage, because often people, even if they're aware that they're ill and they are getting closer to death, will push back on that. Mum, Dad, I'm really concerned. How are you doing? Oh, I'm doing okay. No, you're not. We need to talk about that. And something I want to throw up for something people who really are at the end. Five tasks for the dying. Sometimes in my work, I meet someone and the penny drops, they realize that they are actually close to death. And many of them will say, well, what am I supposed to do? What is there for me to do? You know, I can't leave the house because I'm so tired. I can't do very much for myself. So what are my most things? So going back to what Dick mentioned earlier and Andrew mentioned earlier, I think for a good death, there is forgiving and asking forgiveness. My pastor in England, his wife was a brilliant Christian, fantastic Christian, wonderful evangelist for Jesus. But she herself, in the last few months of her life, she realized that there are times when she and her husband perhaps have behaved in a high-handed manner, and she needed to ask other people for their forgiveness. And there are times, if we're honest, church politics, other people were really nasty to her, and she needed to forgive them, make that mental choice. Loving and being loved. I think we underestimate, as people in our society, that part of Christ's ministry is that we're supposed to step into people's suffering and help them. And when people say, I'm okay, it's not really that big a deal, when people are in denial how sick they are, they prevent other people helping them. And I've seen even in our own family how hurtful it has been when people have had maybe cancer or some serious diagnosis and people have wanted to help them and they've said, no, I don't want you. So being loved, letting other people in to help you, and loving. I was talking with Dick a few weeks ago, how impactful it can be for a person if they're coming to the end of their life to make the decision, I'm going to talk to all my grandchildren. I'm going to have a proper conversation with them. I'm going to sit them down, and I'm going to say to John, John, this is what I love about you. This is what brings me joy when I see you. This is what I hope for you. I want to pray for you. I think if my father, in the last weeks of his life, had sat me down with for that kind of conversation, it would be something I'd be thinking about every day for the rest of my life. And then the very last thing is also an important thing. It's saying goodbye. And unfortunately, so often when we're on the medical treadmill and we're dealing with sickness, we don't have the mental space and time to say goodbye, to say and do these important things. And I think if we choose hospice, we can simplify our lives and we can have, instead of wasting it on unproductive medical treatment that doesn't bring us quality of life, we can spend it on that which is important. Thank you very much for your attention.
Whoa, got an applause. Well, thank you. We are at the end of our time today. Hopefully, again, you know, we set a phrase, you know, set a context, looked at a lot of scripture, death, dying, resurrection, all of these things, and we're saying, as Christians, those who believe, we don't have to do this exactly like the world says. I mean, there are things to press into, things to hold on to that will help guide us. And, you know, there are important things to do. We want to keep looking at that. But keep talking about it. You know, just hopefully this, you know, we realize we're brushing over so many things. We could have a 12-week class, an 18-week class looking at this. But hopefully, you know, this will encourage you to have some of these conversations with one another, encourage each other in that, but then also in your families as well. All right, go in peace. Go.